Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations. This is a summary of episode 17, where we discussed Tokenism by Rosabeth Moss Kanter. To find out more, get the text, and to listen to the actual episode, please go to our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. My name is Dimitris, coming to you from Birmingham in the United Kingdom.
And this is Pedro, coming to you from Brasilia in Brazil.
So there's two of us now, and we're trying this new thing with the summary where maybe it's a dialogue, not what's the word for when one person speaks?
Monologue?
Monologue, yes. Or it's not a monologue. So if you like it, let us know, and we'll see what happens. So in this episode, we were joined by our dear friend and colleague, Dr. Deborah Bruce from Kingston University in London, to discuss a classic paper by Rosabeth Moss Kanter on gender in organizations. And the paper is Some Effects of Proportions on Group Life, Skewed Sex Ratios and Responses to Token Women. In that paper, Kanter explores how interactions within a group or an organization are affected by the different number of people from distinct social types. So these can be either more men, fewer women, more whites, fewer racial minorities, basically more of one and less of the other, much less of the other. In particular, she focuses on groups with skewed gender ratios, looking at high proportion of men and small number of women, and women in that situation are the tokens. The study is based on observations and interviews with sales teams that recently began to incorporate women in the workforce in the early 70s. So very much a time of shifting gender relations. And she shows how structural factors stifled the potential of their female members. And this is really interesting stuff. I wasn't present on the episode, but I do have our resident expert here with us, Pedro.
Barely, but I'll do my best.
Yeah. And much like Ralph, I think I found your discussion to be very eye-opening in a certain ways that perhaps I didn't notice as a more male member of the species. So it's definitely recommend you to listen to it or read the paper. So Kanter was one of the first people to put gender on the map, so to speak, in terms of understanding the dynamics of organizational behavior. And this word, tokenism and token women, it basically relates to a numerical underrepresentation of a group of people. But and I think you can help me out here. Kanter characterizes it as it's not just that there's fewer of one and more of the other. It's more that those people who are hyphenated individuals, I think how Deborah characterized them during the episode, they are people who are seen as symbols of categories. So, for instance, you described your experiences from research where a woman who is an engineer is not an engineer. She is a woman hyphen engineer, whereas this isn't the case with men.
Yes, that's correct. I think it's worth saying two things that we actually discussed during the episode. Is Kanter is taking this idea from tokenism from other social theorists, and I think it started when different groups started to enter organizations at large. But the interesting thing here is not only that they are... So the idea of token is that they are numerically a minority, but also that they are in a way used by organizations as kind of a card to as a proof of diversity, of that they are actually more inclusive than people might think. So I think there is also this game of this first entrance of minorities is used as a way almost to gain legitimacy. And this is one of the things that we discussed. And this aspect of hyphenated individuals is quite interesting because what Kanter is saying that, and I think that was the breakthrough of the whole paper, is that when you have the first entrance of these groups, you are not necessarily done with the problem. What happens is that these individuals are subject to a specific set of pressures, and they are perceived in a different way. So as you're saying, you know, they are seen as a symbol of a whole category, not as individuals in themselves. So that's why this idea of the hyphenated, you know.
You know what got me thinking when I was reading the paper and then listening to your discussion is, if you go on a website of a university now,
mm-hmm.
Especially that the new students are arriving and the new academic year is starting, have you noticed you get these quite kind of almost generic pictures where you have three or four students going and one is white, one is maybe Indian, one is black, one is Asian, and mm-hmm. It's always this combination of different minorities that are there as tokens, essentially, to show that, yes, see, we are diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much the same with, it started with organizations, hasn't it?
Yeah.
That's what she's writing about.
There's a big thing, I think, in gender theory. I just want to say something quickly. There is actually research, I can't remember the name of the authors, discussing how universities advertise, what kind of pictures they use for the leaflets and flyers and pamphlets that they circulate for new students. And some people were actually saying, accusing some universities to portray a much more diverse campus than it actually is. You know, but some people were actually saying that, well, that's actually in a way positive because it might lead minorities to apply because they have this idea that, you know, it is already a diverse campus, they'll feel comfortable there, and that actually might help, you know, teaching the balance and creating more equality in the distribution. So,
right. So it's like fake it till you make it.
Yes, kind of. Well, this is one position. The other position is a bit against it, you know, it's kind of, you know, washing, diversity washing in a way. But representations have strong politics, so you are right on the money on that.
That's true. I guess it, in part it depends on what you use it for. So mm-hmm. when this counter was very specific about what counts as a token, and if you, as you mentioned, use it to show that here, see, we have one of those, so we are a diverse organization or a group of people or whatever, then that's probably not okay. And the picture highlights another thing of the paper, the picture with the students that we just talked about, is that it brings heightened attention to those individuals. And much like with putting up a huge banner with a minority person on your website, having someone in your group or within an organization who is different
mm-hmm.
in any way, like literally any way, brings more attention to what that person does. So it puts them under the microscope in a way. And Cantor mm-hmm. talks about this at length.
Yes.
And describes what are the mainly negative effects of that kind of behavior.
That's one of the first mechanisms she tackles, which exactly this problem of the heightened visibility that the tokens experience and how that creates performance pressures. And I guess that before we delve too much into the different mechanisms, should we give just a brief panoramic view of what kind of study Cantor did, what kind of company she was looking at?
It was a Fortune 500 sales organization or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, correct. It was a large industrial organization, and she was looking at the sales department of that specific company.
It was very, very masculine, very
yes.
traditionally masculine, that sort of thing.
For sure.
Very technical.
And the interesting thing is that I think, you cannot see as much in the paper, but this paper is actually part of a larger work, which is the famous book Men and Women of the Corporation. I can't remember the number, but it's one of the chapters in the book. And it's part of her large research, which has used a lot of observations, interviews. So in a way, she has a very strong picture of, I would say, the inner workings of this large organization, which makes for a very interesting set of data. And that's why I think her, I would say, the mechanisms she identifies and the process are so rich, because you can really see how this is part of the way the organization is run.
Oh, they're definitely fascinating. So this first mechanism of heightened visibility, basically, while she does mention that there are some positive outcomes in that it's easier to be noticed for promotion, for instance, a lot of it comes with the token person being subject to increased performance pressures.
Yeah.
And so basically everyone's looking, okay, so what are they doing? Are they making any mistakes? Are they following the process?
Mm-hmm.
As well as, interestingly, it stifles their emotional expressions of the tokens. And that is an issue for tokens because as with being seen as a symbol of a category,
mm-hmm.
this very much eliminates any possibility of that individual for being an individual. Because everything they do, everything they are on the mm-hmm. outside becomes a label, essentially.
True.
For other people in organization.
Yeah. Ralph had an interesting anecdote from, I think, his work experience. And I think he was saying that, you know, in specific settings when you're discussing a new idea or a new technology, whatever it is, and there is a minority present, you know, in that case, I think it was a black woman. Someone had asked that person to give the black woman perspective. And I think that illustrates exactly that, you know, it's this idea that the person can speak for the whole category. And Deborah had an interesting comment, you know, in that instead of these people trying to be more, I would say, informed of different perspectives, you know, with the expectation that the person will speak for everyone and solve the issue right on the spot. And how this creates problems, because it's exactly this issue of visibility, you know, you expect that person to carry this weight.
Right, which is what makes them a token, that, you know, here we have one, so we have the whole range of perspectives. And that kind of feeds into the second difference, which is the exaggerating distinctions between men and women, and that creates a sense of social isolation for the token. So token women felt rejected from their male colleagues and disconnected from also other women who were members of their group, you know, or organization.
So I guess the issue you're touch upon is the issue of boundary heightening, which is exactly that, you know, and Cantor talks about it as something that happens exactly with the entrance of the tokens in a group, because the idea is that when a woman enters a male-dominated group, it in a way showcases more the difference that exists and the response she observed from the dominant, which is the way she calls the majority in a group, was to exaggerate some traits that were perceived as characteristic of that social group. So in that situation, men would tell even more crude jokes, you know, that usually had woman as the subject of the joke, and dynamics like that, as you can imagine. So in a way, it produces a kind of reminder of difference, you know, this exaggeration of the characteristics of the dominant group.
Yes, and that feeds into the final category, which is that tokens felt subject to constrained expectations and roles consistent with gender stereotypes. So
mm-hmm.
token women felt regulated to what is expected of women. Mm-hmm. And Cantor gives these really interesting and, as Ralph said, a bit spooky
mm-hmm.
Titles for these roles. And some of them are a mother, a seductress, an Iron Maiden, a Madonna, or pet, a whore. And Deborah made a very insightful comment that these labels, they mm-hmm. function as lenses through which the dominant majority is ready to understand the minority.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we can understand you, but only through these lenses. These are the ways in which token person can become intelligible. So you're either a mother or a seductress, a maiden, pet or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And each of them comes with a significant set of drawbacks for the token. For instance, a pet is someone who has been kind of shielded from the rest of the organization by a powerful decision maker or something like akin to that. And then she becomes a pet, and that limits her opportunities elsewhere. And Ralph mentioned that, yeah, like you would think that protecting someone from the abuse or harassment or anything like that is a good thing, but Cantor very vividly describes what are the drawbacks and limitations and even the professional and personal damage that comes from that.
Yeah, and one thing that we discussed as well, and I think that's very powerful in Cantor analysis, is that she also talks about the response of the tokens to that mechanism, to that situation. And she, I think, makes a compelling point that most of them would actually accept those roles because it's too hard already to fight to be accepted, and then you would have a second fight to try to get out of those stereotypes that you are fulfilling. So in a way, those roles tend to be accepted, and I can see that pretty much from, you know, like my own experience, and I think Deborah had interesting sights on that as well from her own experience in organizations, in which you tend to accept that because it makes the fight more tolerable to a certain extent. The other interesting thing is that, as you can imagine, with time has changed and the number of women has changed in organizations, the stereotypes have changed as well. And one of the things that we discussed is that those initial stereotypes are pretty negative about women. It's almost like they are, in a way, creating, unsettling the balance of the workplace in a negative way. But I guess that the new stereotypes are more about the positive side of femininity in their workplace. Now, there is a lot of discussions, at least there was some decades ago, about the way women lead. It's a famous paper by HBR, and how they would feminize and bring new values and ideas to the workplace. But what we discussed is that actually it is still a reification, you know. Women are, in a way, invited to bring something that they expected to have. But they still preserve this kind of binary view of gender. You know, they're never, you know, allowed to be individuals in themselves. They still have, the roles change, but the mechanism stays. Let's put it that way.
I guess one of the takeaways that Deborah mentioned for this is that it's not up to the tokens to work out how they should be perceived by the majority. It's up to the majority to learn and not be ignorant and sexist and whatnot.
So one final thing I think is very strong about the paper is the implications that Kanter tried to draw from her research. And I think that, as you can imagine, she was a strong advocate for quotas. And now, because, of course, as you see, the idea is that this small number of women is not going to upset the dynamics. So she thought that as more people from a specific group enters, you're going to have, you know, maybe these mechanisms is going to change. But then we discussed that although it's an interesting, I would say, policy, there are many problems with this idea that it's all about numbers, because it glosses over the fact that gender is associated with power, you know, first of all. So it's not only about the numerical number in itself that might produce change, but has to do something more basic, I would say. You know, the status and the stereotypes are associated with the way that men and women in society at large are prescribed to behave. And the other things that we talked about is that although Kanter tries to posit this theory as being applicable to different situations, such as Dimitri said at the beginning, you know, race relations, for instance, there are limits to this idea that numerical balance can be achieved for all the different minorities, not least because it's hard to imagine, I don't know, sexual minorities or even religious minorities in certain situations to become numerically as balanced as the dominant in a situation. So, you know, the policy, the strategy in a way falls short in these other cases.
And that concludes episode 17. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this summary and found it to be of value. Let us know if you like the two-person format more than the one person. And do get in touch with us via our website or on any of the social media accounts to let us know what you think of the podcast in general. Maybe there's something we could do better, or just let us know that you like it. We're always very keen to hear from our lovely listeners. Next week, we're going to talk about a more contemporary topic based on an article from Financial Times by Sarah O'Connor on algorithmic management. We're going to be joined by a special guest, Arianna Tassinari, to help us with that discussion, and it's just really great. Do tune in, it's super interesting. We just recorded it today, actually, and can't wait to release it for you next week. So if you'd like to learn more about what we're going to be talking about, so what the article is about, please go to our website, to the episode page, and tune in next week as we discuss algorithmic management here on Talking About Organizations.